from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again from New Orleans, Louisiana, from the French Market, and the Pittsburgh desk weighed in with a demurral when I mentioned last week that this is proclaims itself the oldest city market in the United States. Well, I checked the sign downstairs on my way in. 1791 is the date to beat, babe. And by babe, I mean ma'am. The news here in New Orleans, this is such a great place to be doing a broadcast, because right out the window is a statue of Joan of Arc mounted on a horse. Joanie on the pony, as they call her here. And a pile of garbage. If the trash can's full, please. But here's the news. Waste Management, the company that handled garbage collection in New Orleans before the thing, will resume that task starting tomorrow, daily in the French Quarter and Central Business District, and once a week in other parts of the city. So that's the task of picking up trash has been handled since Katrina by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen. So no wonder there's trash sitting outside on the street right now. And the other thing that we're getting back in New Orleans is mail service, which has been very erratic. Magazines are still embargoed, but the U.S. Mail is saying they're gearing up. So if they could just deliver the mail directly to the trash trucks and save the rest of us the middleman responsibilities, I think now you're talking efficiencies of scale. So the speaking of cleaning up trash, the part of the federal government that really works hard at picking up the trash has decided that the Cheney shooting story is over. Nothing to see here, folks. Move on. Not so fast, please. I'm batting cleanup on this one. I got to take my wax. First of all, the Houston Chronicle notes that there are contradictions between the official sheriff's report on the incident and accounts from the vice president, the account from the vice president. He's given only one to Fox News. In Cheney's account to Britt Hume, he said he turned to his right to shoot the quail as it was rising. And he said did not know that Harry Whittington was standing in the shallow depression. In the sheriff's report, the vice president is described as turning to his left, counterclockwise, to fire at the bird. Attempts to contact Chief Deputy Sheriff Gilberto San Miguel about the discrepancy was, according to the Houston Chronicle, unsuccessful. All right, but then now, they're bitter, you know? How about the Associated Press? They do a whole story about the discrepancies that have plagued this story, that have piqued people's interest despite the seeming trivial nature of the whole deal, or maybe because of it. There's no evidence that beer impaired Cheney's judgment, says the Associated Press. Initial denials that he had consumed alcohol were wrong. No one was drinking, said the hostess at the beginning. No, zero, zippo. She said the hunters washed down their lunch with Dr. Pepper. Later, she qualified her comments and said beer might have been in the cooler, but she didn't think anyone drank any. The victim explained to the investigating officer, foremost, there was no alcohol during the hunt. But Cheney acknowledged Wednesday, I had a beer at lunch. And, of course, there were discrepancies in the victim's condition, most notably the failure to note early on that one of the shotgun pellets had lodged in his heart, little place called the heart. The the Republicans are the law and order party. We know this. We remember this from the 90s. Law, the rule of law, ladies and gentlemen. What do you teach your children if not the rule of law? So in the last 6 months, we've learned that Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California has never had the proper driver's license for driving a motorcycle, something he's been doing for years. And Dick Cheney did not have the proper license to hunt quail in Texas. Didn't have the $7 stamp. I know, it's just $7. It's rule of law, babe. And by babe, I mean sir. Finally, at the top, there's the Washington Times, no enemy of the administration. Quote, experienced hunters said Vice President Dick Cheney alone bears the blame for the weekend mishap. Every local hunter interviewed by the Washington Times said the vice president violated hunting's cardinal rule, which is don't shoot cardinals. No, sorry. Never pull the trigger unless you're 100% sure of your target. And he violated rule number two as well. Never swing on game outside the safe zone of fire. He apparently was overzealous or too excited about the shot, and he didn't practice safe measures to make sure he didn't shoot his friend. He was wrong, said James Harris, a hunter and taxidermist from Mechanicsville, Maryland, which beats being a mechanic from Taxidermistville, Maryland. Doesn't it? Really? Now. Hello, welcome to the show.
Harry, I had no idea you were there.
I'm right here. Thanks for noticing. I'm Harry Shearer, ladies and gentlemen, from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, and this is edition of Le Show, as opposed to the others, which this isn't, for your listening information and edification. More about this story that's over, because I contest its overness on your behalf, from this Washington Times, again, fan of the administration, piece about hunters. Robert Beale of Waldorf, Maryland, home of the salad? No. Has been hunting since he was 9 years old. Has never known anyone who was hit by birdshot. Quote, I have never sprayed anybody, and nor have I ever been sprayed, and if I ever was, I'd never go hunting with that guy again, he said. He questioned why the hunting party would split up. And they shouldn't have left a hunter straggling back behind them. They should have got dogs over there, or they should have gone over there to help find the bird. I don't care if you're the vice president. Go help. And then they should have all regrouped. They should have stayed abreast, he says. Mr. Cheney's spokeswoman dodged, this is the Washington Times word, dodged questions about the hunter's comments. Quote, the vice president has made his comments on what happened, she said. So, story really is over then, ain't it? But more stories, always. For example, ladies and gentlemen, much ado now about Iran and its nuclear program and whether they can be trusted with enriching uranium. And the question that might arise if you hear the following two news stories is, can anyone be trusted with this stuff? Dateline Washington. The Energy Department no longer has an estimate of when it can open the nuclear waste repository that it wants to build at Yucca Mountain, northwest of Las Vegas, and it may never, what's that word? Never have an accurate prediction of the cost, says the Energy Secretary. Samuel Bodman said at a nuclear power industry conference, his department is redoing research and design for Yucca, which was supposed to start accepting civilian nuclear wastes in 1998. But it's a first-of-its-kind project. Making it difficult, you see. Last week, the Deputy Energy Secretary hinted for the first time that the money the Energy Department has been collecting from the nuclear industry since the 1980s might not be enough to pay for the project. The last published cost, $60 billion, but that was in 2001. And we're so far beyond that. That's pre-9/11 money. The department is facing lawsuits from utilities that want to recover extra costs created by the delay. Bodman was speaking to nuclear industry executives, and a lawyer in the audience asked him, as we say down here, how the industry could build new plants, like the president wants them to, without assurance of a place to store the waste, which is required, you see, by the law. Bodman did not answer the question, but started describing the problems at Yucca Mountain. Government scientists and their commercial contractors were trying to cope with research work that was done poorly by the United States Geological Survey. Really? Was Mike Brown or Chertoff in charge over there? Another problem is a court decision that forced the United States Environmental Protection Agency to publish standards governing leakage of radioactive waste for 1 million years. That's the so-called Raquel Welch lawsuit. No, it's not. Instead of the initial estimate of 10,000 years. So, lie bigger, be the result of the court decision. And the project managers recently decided, according to our energy secretary, they had to space the wastes more widely apart to prevent temperature inside the mountain from reaching the boiling point because the effects of steam are difficult to predict. Yeah, you don't want your nuclear waste boiling, really. If you stop to think about it, for 1 second, let alone 15 years. This is us. How about the Brits? Operators of a nuclear reprocessing plant called Sellafield were this week ordered to keep a closer eye on atomic material to prevent it from falling into hostile hands. Well, that's a good idea. They haven't been doing that. The European Commission issued a formal warning to British nuclear group Sellafield, which is abbreviated BNGSL for your convenience. Don't mind me, I'm just pushing buttons. The order follows a series of inspections at the plant, which resulted in a report stating that accounting and reporting procedures do not fully meet European atom standards. So, can't trust us, can't trust the Brits with this nuke stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe. I don't know what we should do with it. I can't even get a CD machine to work, let alone a nuclear plant. What do you want? But now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News from outside the bubble. It's right here. Despite reports of growing tensions and even occasional clashes between Islamists and nationalists, the predominantly Sunni insurgency in Iraq appears increasingly united and confident of victory. This according to a report released on Wednesday by the Brussels-based International Crisis Group and published in the Asia Times. The 30-page report, based primarily on analysis of the public communications of insurgent groups as well as interviews and past studies about the insurgency, also concludes that rebel groups have adapted quickly and effectively to changing U.S. tactics. Which brings up, or at least it might, the rationale for keeping people in Guantanamo. You know, the U.N. criticized Guantanamo this week. And we heard the rationale, well, we're still getting useful intelligence from prisoners in Guantanamo about the structure of Al-Qaeda. Here are reports that, not for the first time we hear, Al-Qaeda changes its structure, and as does the insurgency in Iraq, to deal with changing U.S. tactics. So that's got to be good intelligence now, these four-year-old intelligence from these guys who've been hung by their heels. Quote, over time, the insurgency appears to become more coordinated, confident, sensitive to its constituents' demands, and adept at learning from the enemy's successes and its own failures, said the report. Well, why not let them run FEMA? They sound like the right people for that job, don't they? But wait, there's more. Tony Blair this week said the U.S. detention camp at Guantanamo Bay was an anomaly that would have to be dealt with. I would prefer, he added in a television interview, I would prefer that Guantanamo was not there. I would prefer it was closed. Yes, our ally, Tony Blair, ladies and gentlemen. But, wait, there's more. There's still more. After the revelation of new photos of torture from Abu Ghraib, the Iraq Human Rights Minister is demanding that the United States turn over control of all prisons in Iraq to Iraqis. But there have also recently been revelations about Shiite death squads inside the Iraqi police. The Americans think it's the Iraqi prison and police system that needs American supervision. CIA jets suspected of flying terrorist suspects to secret prisons for torture have landed at commercial British airports and received help from United Kingdom Air Traffic Control. This admitted for the first time this week on the issue of extraordinary rendition, don't you know? It's the first formal acknowledgement that British authorities were aware that CIA flights associated with extraordinary rendition have traveled through United Kingdom airspace. Members of Parliament say it shows that ministers could no longer claim they had no knowledge of CIA flights that have been linked to the policy of sending terrorist suspects for interrogation in countries that carry out torture. More good news from Iraq. Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr, who's kind of the kingmaker in the current Iraqi government, now says he rejects the Iraqi constitution, backed by his partners in the biggest parliamentary bloc. I reject this constitution, which calls for sectarianism, and there is nothing good in this constitution at all, he told Al Jazeera this week. You know that there have been new photographs from Abu Ghraib, thanks to the Australians. They were our allies, weren't they? Thanks, babe. And by babe, I mean mate. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is totally copyrighted. This is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, just a little follow-up from last week. I told you about a little incident where a stewardess leaning over me to pour wine into my neighbor's glass just to refresh him. Spilled the wine all over me and killed my computer. Well, I don't think last week the death notice was in on the computer, but it's official. So I've been now investigating, you know, like you do, to find out how they train stewardesses to pour wine. You know, to find out if this was, in the words of British Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking about Guantanamo Bay, if this was an anomaly. And we wish it weren't there. So I asked the flight attendant, excuse me, I said stewardess. How gauche. I asked the flight attendant on the way back to Los Angeles this week, how are you people trained to pour wine? Wouldn't it make more sense, especially if it's white wine and the bottle is cold and maybe a little wet and maybe a little slippery? Wouldn't it make more sense to take the glass from the passenger? A lighter object, easier to hold and control, bring it to your cart, and then pour the wine, refresh it, whatever you want to do with it, there, from the bottle, keeping it safe, keeping the bottle safely on the cart, and then returning the glass to the passenger for his enjoyment. And she said, no, that's not the way we're trained at all. No, we're trained that once the passenger has drunk from the glass, it's impolite for us to touch it. Now, I'm not the politest guy in the world, but I'm not the most impolite guy in the world either. And I'd never heard of that. I'd never heard of that as an article of politeness. And then I happened to be sitting next to a United captain, a pilot captain, on the way back here. And I said, is that how they train the stewardesses on your airline? Said, no. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure that there are flight attendants, male and female, other people who might know how you train how you are trained to pour wine in the air. I'm just wondering. Not that I'm going to sue or anything. You know, it's just I want to use it as a learning experience. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Deadline Tucson manager Ozzie Gillen admitted his first mistake on the eve of the White Sox's first training workout. He issued a lengthy apology to Alex Rodriguez for calling the New York Yankee star a hypocrite in a recent issue of Sports Illustrated magazine. But he's not going to stop making candid comments. Quote, I apologize to Alex, his family, his fans, the New York Yankees organization, to the White Sox organization, because that's the first time I feel I did something wrong. Gillen said, I've done a lot of controversial things before, but I started this one, and I'm going to finish it. He clarified his use of the word hypocrite, saying the word isn't perceived as harshly in Latin America as it is in the United States. This was over whether A-Rod should play it for the United States or the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic that we're also a Twitter about. Dateline Halifax, Nova Scotia's Minister of Economic Development resigned this week after admitting he was in a conflict of interest regarding a government loan to a potato farm. This is a Canada way. The $260,000 Canadian loan was paid this week to a potato farm company that leases land from the Nova Scotia minister's family. Quote, on reflection this week, I now believe I violated the ministerial code of conduct by being in a conflict of interest. I realize now I've made a mistake, and I apologize to Nova Scotians and to my colleagues in the legislature. Dateline Brazil, a coalition of American churches sharply denounced the U.S.-led war in Iraq this week, accusing Washington of raining down terror, and quote, that's a quote, and apologizing to other nations for the violence, degradation, and poverty our nation has shown. The statement issued at the largest gathering of Christian churches in nearly a decade comes from the representatives of the 34 U.S. members of the World Council of Churches. Dateline Finland, the decision by Prime Minister Matti Vanhanen to issue an apology for the appearance of the on a Finnish website of the Danish cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad was his own. In his statement issued on Tuesday, this is the foreign minister. No, while the prime minister was attending the Winter Olympics, he used stronger language than many foreign ministry civil servants would have considered sensible, according to a local newspaper. There had been talk for some time of a statement expressing regret over the dispute and that the statement might be made public. So now we have Norway, Denmark, and Finland apologizing. Heath Ledger has explained his camp behavior at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, insisting he was suffering from stage fright. Ledger placed his hand on his hip and giggled as he joined his Brokeback Mountain co-star, Jake Gyllenhaal, to introduce a segment on the gay cowboy film. After his body language raised questions among critics, Ledger slammed speculation he was mocking the serious topic of his movie, insisting he was just uncomfortable on stage. He says, quote, I am so sorry, and I apologize for my nervousness. I would be absolutely horrified if my stage fright was misinterpreted as a lack of respect for the film, the topic, and for the amazing filmmakers, unquote. He says he discovered he was doing a presentation just minutes before going on stage and was shocked by the script. He adds, how can you say all that stuff? Two brave cowboys with a straight face. It was just so surreal. I've stood like that with my hands on my hip since I was a kid. After 61 years, an official of the Japanese government this week finally apologized to the victims and relatives of the estimated 100,000 non-combatant Filipinos who perished in the historic battle for the liberation of Manila. The speech was delivered by the Japanese ambassador, the most awaited part of the commemoration of the historic event. The terror that each Filipino man, woman, and child must have experienced in Manila 61 years ago, he says, is beyond the imagination of any human being. With this historical fact in mind, I would like to express my heartfelt apologies and deep sense of remorse over the tragic fate of Manila, the ambassador said in an emotional speech. About 100,000 Filipino civilians were killed, many of whom suffered atrocities by the Japanese military, he added. Closer to home, the Council of American Islamic Relations has received an apology from Los Angeles radio station KFI. Its morning host, Bill Handel, on January 12th, satirized the Islamic Hajj, then underway in Mecca, specifically lampooning an incident in which several hundred pilgrims were trampled by the surging crowd. Handel said he'd apologize as soon as the Council for American Islamic Relations denounced terrorism and recognizes the right of Israel to exist. KFI management has issued their thoughts on the station's website. Quote, KFI does not condone making light of the deaths of people engaged in religious observances. We regret that listeners found the comments of one of our on-air hosts to be insensitive. I thought that was the whole idea of the radio station. But that's just me, ladies and gentlemen. The English magazine Maxim, in the eye of a storm over publishing a photograph of actress Khushbu in a bikini, this week had apologized telephonically and in the mass media and offered two more options to her to arrive at an amicable settlement. Khushbu is the name of an actress. Magazine has offered to carry an apology the same size as the 100% fake piece that has distressed the actress in a future issue. I'm just looking up Khushbu. She sent legal notices to the editor and publisher of the magazine seeking compensation and says she's not willing to accept any apology from them. Khushbu, ladies and gentlemen, is an actress. The comptroller of the state of Maryland, William Donald Schaefer, issued a handwritten apology to a 24-year-old aide to the governor, whom Schaefer appeared to ogle in a public meeting this week. Just hours earlier, the 84-year-old comptroller continued to insist to reporters there was no reason to apologize. He did a 360, ladies and gentlemen. The head of Australia's wheat export agency, I told you about this story a couple weeks ago, has apologized to an Australian Senate committee for his misleading testimony about millions of dollars in kickbacks allegedly paid to Saddam Hussein's regime under the UN Oil for Food program. Tim Bestley, the chairman of the Wheat Export Authority, apologized to the Senate committee for telling them last November that he knew nothing of bribes allegedly paid to Iraq by Australia's monopoly wheat export company, the Australian Wheat Board. Back to Maryland, Montgomery County officials are apologizing after two local Homeland Security Department employees tried to prevent people from searching for pornography on the internet in a public library. When you wonder what Homeland Security is up to, as trailers still fail to arrive in New Orleans, that gives you some idea. The chief executive of Texas-based Radio Shack Corporation has apologized after making misstatements on a job resume. Did he have the help of Michael Brown? Was Michael Brown? No, that was me. Made that up, that Michael Brown was going into the resume consultancy business because he'd done such a good job on his resume. The resume of the Radio Shack executive, David Edmondson, claims he earned two university degrees that his school cannot place or trace. He's also being investigated by the board of Radio Shack, which is looking into the legal aspects of the situation. Quote, "The contents of my resume and the company's website were clearly incorrect," Edmondson said in a statement. "I clearly misstated my academic record, and the responsibility for these misstatements is mine alone." And finally, ladies and gentlemen, Sir Elton John has accepted undisclosed libel damages from the London newspaper, The Sunday Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch, over a claim in the newspaper regarding the star's behavior at a charity ball. The allegations caused him distress and embarrassment. The paper erroneously repeated an entirely false rumor that he acted in a rude, self-important, and arrogant manner, his lawyer told the court. She added, the paper falsely said Sir Elton issued an absurd edict to guests not to address him until spoken to. He said he sued the Sunday Times regarding the publication, which first appeared in the Daily Mail. Times newspapers acknowledged that the allegation should not have gone to print, publicly withdrew it, and apologized for the distress that it caused Sir Elton. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, it is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, the story that's so over has one other interesting anomaly, the story of the Dick Cheney thing, and that is exactly the status of Harry Whittington, the man that was shot. Here is Dick Cheney on Fox News with Britt Hume, whom he apparently called. That's how the interview happened. Britt Hume says he received a call from Dick Cheney to set up the interview. This after Cheney reportedly received some pressure from somewhere in the White House to do this. Anyway, here on the interview is Dick Cheney. This is unedited, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to how Harry Whittington's status changes in the course of this brief bite.
But he's a great man. He's in great shape, good friend, and you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to he and his family.
How long have you known him?
First met him in Vail, Colorado. I worked for Jerry Ford about 30 years ago.
Would you describe him as a close friend, friendly acquaintance?
No, an acquaintance.
Good friend. Good friend. That bite starts out. He's a good friend. By the end, under the harsh questioning of Britt Hume, he admits the acquaintance. Ladies and gentlemen, to get any real insight on this story that's now over, I think we have to go underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential. Confidential.
There are two kinds of people in the small town masquerading as a capital city known as Washington, D.C. The benighted individuals in the political and media elite who think it's a sign of success when you get your name in the paper. And those of us in the private ops side of town who know that when that happens, it's a sign of failure. Well, this week, by the preponderance of the evidence, I've flopped more repeatedly than a striped bass in a barrel with a face full of birdshot. One thing this little sojourn in the spotlight has taught me was how smart Lynn was to insist that after the initial terrorist threat period ended, We never gave up the secure undisclosed. When I stopped to think about what this week might have been like, with everybody from Britt Hume to Michael Moore camped out in our driveway, it makes me want to have one beer and go shooting. And for a guy who likes to call his own shots, no pun intended, but maybe intended more than I know, for a guy who likes to be the button pusher, not the pushy, this was a more humbling experience than having to applaud at somebody else's State of the Union speech. Normally, the only calls I get from the other half of the executive branch are those that are asking me what's up. But last Tuesday, I was invited to Karl Rove's office, and his people made it very clear that the invitation was not transferable. Tuesday morning, 10:17 a.m.
All right, Dick, let's dispense with the pleasantries as having been vocalized, okay?
Fine by me. My Batmobile's double parked.
You enjoy your autonomy, don't you, Richard?
I think it's served both my country and myself pretty darn well. Certainly beat the alternative.
I.e. going to funerals and waiting for GW to die? Well, I think the president, if he were to focus on the past for a moment instead of fixing his gaze totally on the future, I think he might have reason to feel as if, like, your autonomy is the elephant he's busy cleaning up after.
Carl, look, I didn't spend my adult life and half of my wife's climbing up to the top of this particular greasy pole just to wind up being ordered around by an operative. Candid or Maddox Poindexter.
I didn't know you looked down on operatives, Dick, but all right, no dramatics. Just a clear, unambiguous suggestion by your commander-in-chief that you break the silence on this little shootout of yours and go out and make a contrite, plausible statement about how sorry you are and everything. Except, of course, you know, not everything.
Of course, Carl, appreciate the consideration. Look, pal, maybe you haven't read the Nexus file on me lately, but word has it that I'm not the make-a-contrite-statement kind of guy. That's not why you hired me. That's not why I hired on. If you wanted a camera-ready pretty boy, you should have insisted that I not choose myself in the first place.
What is this? Miss the obvious day at the secure undisclosed brain? Mr. Vice President, for your information, the vast majority of this shop's energy this week has been expended on a rather bizarre activity of yours.
I know. And the war's going very well.
I'm not talking about the war. Now, I know as senior coordinator for the Katrina recovery and senior counselor at the White House, it really isn't any of my business whether the president continues to believe that executive privilege protects your activities with and through Mr. Libby and earlier on with the Energy Advisory Council. Mm. But, you know, it's not a slam dunk. It may not even be a finger roll.
Just so I can be sure my secretary gets this all down right, should this be filed under threats?
Oh, not a threat. Well, not an imminent threat. Maybe a grave and gathering one. I think you remember those.
Look, nobody's going to buy the Hallmark card Dick Cheney collection. A statement like that would look as phony as a Democrat war hero.
No, you don't do it as a statement. You do it as an interview with a friendly.
What? Am I supposed to pick up the phone and out of the blue call Britt Hume and say, "Hey, Britt, doing anything this afternoon?" Sounds a little broke back and a lot pathetic.
You know, Dick, the president and I seem to have a closer relationship with the Bible than maybe you do, all due respect aside.
Mm-hmm.
But the prophet says there is a time to reap and a time to sow.
I'm familiar with the concept.
Well, maybe this is a time for you to be pathetic. Be sure and take some White House water with you for the trip back.
Just my luck, there wasn't a covey of quail flying behind Carl's head just about then. I did the statement, and the folks in the Cheney Press criticism blowback account worked hard to work it hard. Then I smoothed out the rough edges by kicking back a frosty light one and shooting holes in my wastebasket. When that got old, I placed a call to my close friend Harry Whittington, just to catch up on development since I peppered him in the face and heart. Wednesday, 6:27 p.m.
Well, it still hurts a little bit when I breathe, but I am working on that, Mr. Vice President. I really am.
That's great, old friend. How's your wife? You know, I'm sorry to say I'm so traumatized I don't remember her name at the moment.
It's Mercedes.
Huh. Like the vehicle.
That's right. So the doctor says the bruises are going to disappear in 6 or 8 months, so I guess there goes my cover story in Texas Monthly.
Yeah. Pity.
I was kidding, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, what did you just say, Harry?
I said I was sorry for kidding at a time like this when I'm in the hospital and you're calling to do whatever you're calling to do.
You said you were sorry. Mm-hmm. You gave me an idea. When does the doctor say you can go home?
Oh, he said Friday at the earliest.
So here's what your country needs from you, old pal. On the way out of the hospital, make a little statement of contrition for the trouble you've caused me by letting me shoot you. Give it all the plausibility inherent in your role as a Texas lawyer and political leader. And most important of all, don't take any questions. The time it takes you to do that, they'll have brought a government limo around for you. Enjoy it for the rest of the day.
I don't know if I'll be able to do that, sir. I do look pretty bruised up facially, and like I said, it still hurts to breathe a little.
Well, we'll get the doc to shoot you up real good. Don't worry about the pain, my friend. Uh-huh. As for your face, my people here say Max Factor Egyptian number 9 should do the job just fine.
Well, but, sir, in all due respect, and golly, I am sorry that the incident ruined our first ever time together.
Oh, me too, old buddy.
But just to continue my train here, who's going to believe me apologizing to you? I mean, of course I don't remember the incident all that clearly, but doggone it.
Harry, we're happy to let you do whatever it is you do in your field. Let the experts in believability worry about that. Look, my friend, you agree with me that the country has far more important things to focus on.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, when you make your statement, the story ends. The press corps goes back to sleep. The nation moves on. That's a contribution. Sometimes when people make important contributions, they get other important contributions back. It's a nutty world, these things happen.
Mr. Vice President, I suppose I'm not really in a position to bargain with you.
Not really, but what's on your mind?
Well, if they could make sure the injection is Demerol, that would sure make it easier for me to face that little ordeal.
Harry, mi amigo. We'll see what we can do.
Carl squeezing in on my plenary executive power felt like a new pair of shoes one size too small. But talking to my old friend Harry, that was like putting on some comfortable old slippers and having only one beer. In the partial diary for early February 2006, sincerely yours, Dick Cheney, confidential.
This little place a time or two before, and I liked the words they had painted on the door.
Social, social and pleasure.
Are they drinking? Are they dancing? Are they having a ball? Are they making plans for the next Mardi Gras?
But after social, social and
more of. I heard a rhythm from some drumming that was coming from within. I smelled the catfish fry. You know something's cooking
at the social, social lady pleasure club.
finally got my nerve up and I knocked upon the door. The man who answered said, what would you like to know about
the social,
social lead and pleasure club?
See for yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time of mounting tension with Iran, it's nice to know that we have really, basically, so much in common. Iranians, says the Associated Press, love Danish pastries. Okay? But from now on, when they look for the flaky dessert at the bakery, they have to ask for roses of the Prophet Muhammad. That's right. They've changed the name of the dish. Bakeries across the capital were covering up their ads for Danish pastries this week after the Confectioners Union ordered the name change in retaliation for caricatures of the Muslim prophet published in a Danish newspaper. Given the insults by Danish newspapers against the prophet, as of now, the name of Danish pastries will give way to Rose of Mohammed Pastries, says the union. This is a punishment for those who started misusing freedom of expression to insult the sanctities of Islam, said a cake shop owner in northern Tehran. One of Tehran's most popular bakeries, Danish Pastries, covered up the word Danish on the sign with a black banner emblazoned O Hussein, a reference to a martyred saint of Shiite Islam. Banner is a traditional sign of mourning, and the shop owner declined comment. So, we did it to the French. The Iranians are doing it to the Danish. We are brothers. And the financial cost to the U.S. military for discharging and replacing gay service members under Don't Ask, Don't Tell are nearly twice what the government estimated last year. Taxpayers covering at least $364 million in associated funds. That's broke. That's so broke back. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. On channel 136, it's Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. Is that right? Yeah, I think so. And available as a free podcast. Come on, subscribe to the podcast. It's fun and easy at kcrw.com or at iTunes. And it'll be just like the Corps of Engineers picking up the last bit of trash today, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. story is over. And so is the show. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans. Come on down when you get a chance.